This is Red Ice Radio, a beacon of sanity from Northern Europe. RedIceCreations.com.
Greetings to everyone from around the world tuning in to Red Ice Radio. My name is Henrik, and we say welcome to our new and regular listeners. Susan Joy Renison has an honor degree in physics and geophysics. She is an independent researcher and author of Tuning the Diamonds, Electromagnetism and Spiritual Evolution. And today Susan returns to Red Ice Radio to discuss space weather and energy-driven evolutionary changes. We are going to begin to discuss how an astronomer priest class has created a religion from science and talk about the connection between NASA and the Vatican. Then Susan talks about an influx of energy flooding the Earth, which is coming from a specific point in space. She also presents an esoteric reason for why the elite are attempting to remove CO2, carbon dioxide, from the atmosphere. Stay with us for more. Welcome back to the program, Susan. It's always rewarding and a lot of fun talking with you. I hope you've been doing okay since we last spoke back in July 2010 now. Thanks for coming back on the program.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
You bet. Let's go over your, position again when it comes to space weather and the energy-driven evolutionary changes, so that our listeners who are not familiar with your work or heard you on any of our previous programs can kind of get a better idea of where you're coming from, Susan. So let's go over the basics again.
Okay. I call myself a seeker, and I used to call myself a seeker of the truth. And I suppose essentially that's what I am. I'm British. I have an honours degree in physics and geophysics, but I started a sort of journey when I was quite young, seeking truth and wanting to understand my reality. So about 17, 18, I was involved with Christians, but I felt that there was information that was missing and I didn't really, there was something for me to go looking for. So this is about 30 years now. It's 30 years of seeking truth and enlightenment, personal development, all very sort of New Agey sounding words. However, I am not a New Ager. And because of my experiences now, I call myself a philosopher because I spend a lot of time thinking. I got my degree in 1985. I initially went into the oil industry. Then I went more into computing. Then I had the opportunity to move from the UK, and I've lived in Europe for the last 14 or 15 years, that sort of time. I've lived in Italy, I've lived in Norway, I lived in Switzerland, and I'm actually now back in the UK. Hopefully that's only temporary. Now, I have had a lot of opportunity to study. I am a bookworm. I'm not a socialite. You know, I'm party goer, disco dancer, and all that sort of stuff. That's not me.
Right,
I love
right.
my books, and I've spent a lot of time reading because of my interest in spirituality. I've spent a lot of time investigating the Catholic Church, but obviously because of my science bent, I also I want to understand my reality, and I don't believe that all the truths are available amongst metaphysical literature or spiritual literature. And what's happened is that about the beginning of the 2000, I started reading channeled material, and I started to be curious as to what else was out there. Cut a long story short, as part of my reading and search for truth, I came across the phenomena of space weather, and something like a penny dropped in my mind. The penny dropped that all these books I've been reading were actually trying to point out that there was going to be a massive change. And it wasn't just something that was ethereal, something that was, you know, only a few people would notice. It was going to be a worldwide change, something huge. What actually happened to me, the penny dropped when I saw a massive blast, a coronal mass ejection from the sun. And it was shaped like DNA. And for some reason, it just hit me. Now, in my search for truth over the last 30 years, and also because I've lived abroad, and Italy is a very interesting place because that's where the Catholic Church is in Rome, and there's a very heavy Catholic influence there. I started to notice that there was places and institutions that were not Christian. And I started to realise that there was sort of esoteric groups that had different beliefs to the average Christian types of beliefs. And in my reading, I started to realise that there was what I call a tier two system. You had an elite group of people with specific types of knowledge, and then you had ordinary people with the religions. And this was confirmed for me when I read a book by Sir William Drummond, who wrote a book in, I think it was 1855. I think the first book might have been 1811, and then it was reprinted in 1855. I love old books because they're not so tainted by the sort of the popularity that we have today.
Right, yeah.
And in this guy was a Sir William Hunt Drummond. He was Scottish, a member of Parliament, I believe. And he just didn't believe the Bible at all. He just thought it was fairy tales. He just thought it was... he believed that it was actually filled with astronomical information and analogies and teaching people. It wasn't meant to be taken literally. It was taken as a sort of a body of knowledge that could be used to retain historical information. This book he wrote, is Oedipus Judaicus, was really an eye-opener for me. It confirmed lots of my suspicions. He used comparative linguistics to actually prove that the Bible actually was sort of coding in astronomical information. And for me, the way I view things now is that you have an elite, what I call the astronomer priest class, who have highly scientific, and they've created a religion from their science. The original religion on this planet is based on the worship of the heavens, the stars, the moon, the sun. And it's extremely important because we have had cycles of cataclysm on this planet. We have all the world religions, in my opinion and from my studies, all the world religions retain information concerning major shifts in the cosmic environment, and they've created a religion out of it. So this last week, we've had the Pope talking about the calendars being wrong. The calendars are extremely important to be able to work out when we should be seeing these massive shifts. And the Pope standing up and saying that the calendars are wrong is very important. In my research and understanding, I believe there is a very strong connection between NASA and the Vatican. If you go into my archives, you'll see that they cooperate. The NASA is providing technology to help the Vatican astronomers actually copy and preserve their maps, their astronomical maps. And if you just do a little bit of searching, you'll see that the Vatican has state-of-the-art astronomical observatories. And anybody that's intelligent will want to know, why are they so interested in what's happening in the heavens? Well, that's because we are told by Vatican astronomers that in the Middle Ages, before you were allowed to be either a priest or a philosopher, before you were allowed to become a priest or a theologian or a philosopher, you had to study astronomy first.
Right.
You had to be an astronomer. So this understanding of this astronomer priest class has an historical basis. I'm not making it up. I can give you the name of the person. I would have to actually go and find his details, find his name. In my blog, he's the guy that went on to a comedy program, was talking about astronomy, mm-hmm. all sorts of silly things about. other forms of life and things like that. Oh, in fact, it'll come to me. I can find his name. So this understanding of an astronomer priest class who record astronomical events and pay very close attention to what's happening in the heavens and then translate that into religion for the masses, that is extremely important. That is extremely important. In this last week, we've had the Pope talking about the date of Christ, the birth of Christ. You can find websites on the internet that actually lay out the Christian narrative by astronomical events.
Oh, yeah, sure.
This may be a complete shock to some people, but that is the only way to understand what is taking place now. It's the only way to understand it. The return of Christ is the return of Christ energy, and Christ actually means crystalline energy. They've actually anthropomorphized everything. They've turned everything into humans and all the rest of it. They've created a little religion, or a big religion, for the masses. Now, I'm not saying that there's no such thing as spirituality. There is, because I've had mystical experiences all my life. But people need to understand that there is an elite class of people who understand things at a deeper level. It's a much deeper level of understanding. And what I'm trying to do, I'm trying to decode that and understand my reality. And there's no point for me being interested so much in what's going on in the New Age or the cultic milieu, because that is basically geared towards the masses. It's not geared towards the real seekers, the real truth seekers, those people who are at a higher level of understanding, want to understand things at a higher level. Now, this may offend some people, but this is where I'm coming from. I want to understand my reality, and you have to find out, decode what has been left for us and how the what I call the astronomer priest class operate today. Those people still exist. There are people who fully do understand this. They fully understand this. And I've been trying to find the old books of these people, their interpretations of ancient knowledge that's been preserved. One of their main aims is to preserve ancient knowledge because it's necessary. And it's necessary now because we're facing a massive shift. There's been civilizations on this planet, prior high civilizations on this planet that have been wiped off the planet. All this stuff about Atlantis, there seems to be a tremendous effort to hide our past and say that humans have only been around for 5,000 years, but it's totally ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, you have the Bosnian pyramids now, they've dated those to, is it 25,000 years old or something? I'm not sure if I got that right, but there is many, many artifacts that are being found that indicate that humans have been around quite a long time and that we have had a previous high civilization on this planet. There's also claims by, senior professors, and, quality people, about the fact that we've had telescopes. The Egyptians managed to preserve information about a star system, a binary star system, I think it's called Algol, and they actually recorded the eclipse of these two binary stars. Now, how did the Egyptians know that unless they had, this binary star system is, I think it's 7.2 or 7.5 light years away.
Mm-hmm.
So they must have had sophisticated telescopes to be able to accurately record the eclipse times.
Right.
The period of time when these two stars eclipse each other and we see an eclipse. So it's obvious to me. I can, I've been over 30 years, I've been picking up information that tells me that there is information that is preserved by the elite and concerning astronomy and the importance of understanding about major cycles, major cosmic shifts. The other main point I just want to is there's a book called Hamlet's Mill, written by two academics. When that book was written, one of the academics was actually sacked for actually writing a book. He's an academic. He writes an academic book about myths and what the myths really mean. And his thanks was to be sacked. Because he basically explained that in his analysis of these myths, he talks about long cycles and how this knowledge has been preserved, because myths have been created for the people, for the simple people. And myths are a very good way of preserving certain types of information over very long periods of time. And so we have to understand, on this planet we have remnants. The indigenous people have remnants of this information that's been, either whether you call it myths or whether you call it ancient knowledge, ancient myths, we have knowledge that is that's been handed down. We still have that information, and that was the purpose, was to, so that people could understand. So when you talk about the Native Americans talk about the white buffaloes, they talk about, there's bits in the Bible about the seas turning red. Have you seen the news today in Australia and Bondi Beach?
Mm-hmm.
That they've had this red tide, and our world scientists are saying that these red tides are now becoming more and more frequent, but the sea goes completely blood red.
Yeah, I've seen it in China recently too, but I didn't know it was rivers, showing up in Australia, yes, as well. Yeah.
So these signs have been preserved. We're talking about the sound of the trumpets. That's where you have the what's happening is you have these in the atmosphere, you're having this you have an energy being transmuted into sound, and you're getting these massive blasts. So the only way to understand what is taking place, in my opinion, is to understand the fact that these major shifts and changes have tremendous impact for what life is going to be like on this planet. And the key to the ancient knowledge, I believe today, the key is space weather. There's been a dramatic shift in the last 20, 25 years. And from my point of view, I am a seeker of the truth. I call myself a philosopher because I think. I'm very proud of the fact I've got a brain and I can actually use it, but I am not purely an intellectual. I've had mystical experiences all my life, and I'm an enigma to a lot of people. Because some people really don't think you should use your brain at all. They don't think you're spiritual if you can actually think. And I'll give you a very quick example before we start talking. You ask me questions, but
sure, sure.
I was talking to someone. Don't want to name names, but I've been talking about an interstellar debris field. At any one point in time, now we have something like 9,000 asteroids passing Earth. That's what the I'm just quoting directly what experts are saying.
Mm-hmm.
9,000 asteroids passing through our solar system, passing through Earth at any one time. And, of course, that's now causing a real major problem. Because some of these things, asteroids and comets, they're shrouded in energy, which makes them invisible. So now we're having to use very, very powerful radar to actually see these things. And we're having instances where they just don't see it coming at all. Things are whizzing by. They actually see it one day when it's past us.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's really concerning. The European Space Agency are now creating new radars. And the last 4 or 5 years, there's been much more concerted effort to put together and to use radar to actually even spot these rocks.
Hmm.
And if you go to spaceweather.com, the listing, I mean, I've looked at their old listings, and then it's actually grown, the actual number of rocks that are coming very close to Earth, but sometimes they're just completely missing them. So anyway, I've been talking about this, and I was talking to somebody who I would call an archetypal New Ager, and she said, isn't that the same as the photon belt? Aren't you talking about the photon belt? And I just thought, no, I'm not talking about the photon belt. I'm talking about an interstellar debris field. The photon belt is something completely different. And she's trying to say to me, it's the same, isn't it? Isn't it the same? And I have a problem with people. They pick something up from metaphysical source and they think they're enlightened. They think they know everything. And I'm to fight with this sort of ignorance and arrogance. We live in a very complex world. The universe is complex, and I believe as evolving humans, we have to be able to deal with complexity. It's not all dumbed down and simple. It's actually quite difficult. You actually have to work. One of my things is that I believe I'm an evolving human. My mind, I have synesthesia. And one of the things with synesthesia is that you can actually integrate information and you can work with metaphors quite easily. Some people, if you use the wrong word, they just can't understand what you're talking about. They can't link things up in their mind. If you use the wrong word, they're completely confused. Whereas someone like me, my mind is very good at being able to work out metaphors. So a lot of information that's been held by what I call the astronomer priest class, the elite, is just held in metaphors. It's preserved for the elite. And for someone like me, I can decode it because I can think the way they think. Okay? There is a stage of evolution where you can deal with more complexity. It's not about being super intelligent. It's just about how the brain works. And because I have synesthesia, and that is something I didn't write about in the first version of my book, but I talk about it now because it seems to be a sign of evolution on a vast scale. About 4% of the population now have this synesthesia, and that's about greater complexity and of the brain being able to pick up more information from the environment and present it. It seems to be a sign of evolution. So right. That's why I talk about it. And because I have my own personal experience of that, it's something that's very important to me. But what I want to say is that in my work, trying to teach people about space weather and the implications and the importance of space weather, I'm having to deal with people who want to argue with me. They want it very simple.
Right.
And yep. It's not simple. This whole field, it affects everything. According to NASA, there's virtually nothing on the planet that's not being touched by space weather. They use double negative, not me. I'd prefer to say that virtually everything on the planet is being affected.
Right, right. Now, Susan, let me ask you a little bit about this. I want to return to basically the Pope and the Catholic Church here as well. I mean, we've talked many times on the program about these kind of there are ideas coming out from astrotheology. It also can, as you say, decode the Bible, understand the esoteric references that are made within the works. And it's really interesting that you can, you know, compare this and basically see that there's a greater story being told in the Bible. But what does it mean to you when the Pope then comes out and says what he recently did, that the calendar is wrong, that basically Christ was born, was it later or earlier? Nonetheless, it was a shifting of the calendar.
I wonder if there's something that's been, they're trying to preserve certain information. No, I would be really honest and say I don't know why they chose that particular date as a start of a new dispensation that they have done.
Yep.
That's a fact that they have done. And admitting that it's not quite right, but it's only a few years. It's, you know, they're only talking about, was it 4 BC to 7 BC.
Yeah, something like that.
The websites I've been to, they've said that they're 5 years out. It's not a lot. So I personally am wondering myself, why are they making a big deal about it? I personally think, from my research, they've got much bigger things to worry about, actually. There seems to be conflict between tree rings and the calendar. And I've also found another major discrepancy with precession. And it's quite a lot. So, and one of the things about the Catholic Church, which I've written about, is the fact that they frequently made things up, let's put it like that. And to get things, to make things tally, they used to change the calendars, but it got so bad at one point that they couldn't even work out what century we were living in. This is historical fact. I'm not making anything up. This is historical fact. You've got to think, people, the world we're living today is very different to the world of 300, 400 years ago. People
sure.
were terrified
yeah.
of the Catholic Church. They were monsters. If you didn't do what they expected of you, you could be killed.
Sure. Yeah.
And I've always had this in mind about the power that the church had. I lived in Italy, so I could see it. I've been in the massive, you know, cathedrals, and I've been in the Vatican, you know, the big church, St. Peter's in Rome, and I've been in the Vatican museums. I've seen the power of the church. I've seen the Turin Shroud when it was made available in 2000. I think it was 2000 it was made available. 1998 it was made available. Then they did another showing in 2000. I saw the 1998 showing of it. I've seen the power firsthand. I know it's a decaying power, but the power that they had and the riches they have. When I was there, went to Turin, I saw... they brought some artifacts out, just a little showing on a side street in Turin. You know, you went to the main church to see the shroud, and then there was all of these things that have been. You could just walk in off the street and go and have a look, and you saw these crosses encrusted with jewels and crowns and gifts from the kings and queens. The power that those items represented. There's a very incestuous relationship between governments, the church, kings and queens.
Sure.
That's how they maintain power. I'm not an anarchist. It's just fact. That's how it is.
The popes are the new pharaohs of our age. Or I mean, as you say, sure, some of it seemingly might be declining, but the fact is that they've held so much power for such a long time that this hasn't gone away yet because, you know, their influence is still very, very, very strong, you know?
And the simple masses are bought into it. And that is what you have to understand, is the simple... masses have not really had any choice. When I lived in Norway, I used to do a lot of traveling and sightseeing, and I remember going into one church, and the rich had, in the churches, the rich would have like a separate cubicle, literally a cubicle where the rich sat, and then the poor people would be sitting on these tiny little benches, you know, all huddled up, and you had to go to church on Sunday. It was mandatory. And so for me, a lot of people cannot conceive of this, of a rich elite class that controlled what you believed. And if you didn't, you'd be locked up or you could be killed, or the witches, how many witches were killed. So, okay, going back to the calendars. I personally, in my opinion, the calendar only being 5 years out or 5-6 years, that's, to me, is insignificant. And why is he talking about it? I think it's a bigger problem. I think he's pointing out a bigger problem. That's what I think. But to who is he pointing it out to? I don't know.
Is this connected? Let's just return to that point, because I thought it was interesting that this in some way represents not a Christ, or that the Christ is returning, but the Christ... Energy. A transformation energy, basically. Does this mean that the times we live in now, they're trying to adjust the calendar because there is an incoming energy, they're aware of that, and therefore they're basically trying to pinpoint in more detail when it's actually going to fully hit, if you will? Is that what they're doing?
Well, that's an interesting point, because if they're going to continue with this, their role as astronomy priests, and if you think about it as something that they've always done, it's part of their duty almost to preserve this ancient knowledge and this astronomical knowledge for future generations. It's a role that they've accepted to do. I don't know what markers that they're using. There's obviously some major markers that they're using. We know, in fact, I love the old books. I have a book from about 1895. And in this book, it's just a few sentences where it talks about, and by the way, the church is going to be in problem, going to have major problems because the Christ energy is coming. It's arriving now. It's literally a sort of energy coming from a certain point in space. And I even know where it's coming from. I've done a lot of work. But the point is that they know that energy is coming into our solar system. Christ energy is actually hitting the planet, and the volumes, now we're getting volume. What marker they're using to decide what is the tipping point? I think what you're saying is the tipping point.
Yeah.
I don't know what that tipping point is.
Susan, it's interesting that they're using, I just want to mention that as well, by the way, because we go back to that idea that many of the signs that are seen are kind of, well, they're biblical in nature, right? The rivers turning red, you know, we have the sounds of the trumpets, if you will, that mentioned earlier. So a lot of them are still within the vocabulary of biblical terminology, if you will.
But the Bible was there to preserve this ancient knowledge. It's there as a teaching people morals, teaching people in preserving ancient knowledge. That's what I believe the Bible's there
right.
for, quite yep. frankly.
Yep.
It's a document that's used. The scholars will tell you that the Bible was based on Sumerian text. If you go to other religions as well, you can find these passages that talks, it's just numbers, big numbers. What are these numbers about? The Vedas, there's passages with astronomical information embedded. And that's for the astronomer priest class to make sure that information is not lost, it's preserved, and it's preserved through religion for the masses. And I know it sounds really strange, but to me, that is the way that they've done it. That's just historical. That's how they've done it.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
So the information is not lost.
If you look back into history, as you say, this is something that you can clearly see that... You know, the retelling of the stories, it's a very, you know, it's a clever way of doing it. And we've talked about that with other guests on the program many times as well. So I definitely understand what you're saying. Now, let's talk about if this in any way is connected to the ending of calendars. We're kind of in that time period right now. And this kind of slight adjustments, if you will, then that the Pope have been talking about. Mm-hmm. Is it connected yes. to that in any way? That it's, okay, it's we're in the period right now, but it might still be a few years off, whatever. Is this what this is about?
Well, one of my issues in the last few years is, why have modern Mayan elders been ignored? Why have we been listening to people who... I mean, the calendars that are being used by a lot of people are just, they've been worked out as to what they mean. As far as I'm aware, modern Mayan elders do not hold classes and teach people how to interpret their calendars. And also the Mayan elders have responsibility for timekeeping amongst many different indigenous groups. The different indigenous groups look to the Mayan elders to get the calendars right. And I've actually talked about the envy that the Mayan calendars that they actually have with other groups. I think that they've done quite well. I know there's going to be people going to be arguing with me, but I've been following Carlos Barrios and his brother. And I feel that when they pointed out to people that we're in a point of transition, and we're moving to the age of the ether or space, it only makes sense what they're saying if you take into account space weather. They're saying that the next period is going to be for 5,200 years. This is long term. If you go to what you call astrology, but I don't actually believe it is astrology, I believe it's astronomy, and you talk about the zodiac, we now have... modern astronomers pointing out that there are 13 signs in the zodiac, not 12, and they're being very forceful about it because, anyway, that 13th sign is very important because that's where the energy is coming from, and I think it's hidden. So you have Jesus and the 12 disciples, that's preserving a certain truth about the zodiacs, and we have astronomers being very forceful, saying that we're already in the age of Aquarius. If you look at the sign of the age of Aquarius, what is it? It's a young man and it's pouring an urn out of water, out of the skies. To me, it's as plain as it can be. There is a deluge of energy coming. That is the symbology for the age of Aquarius. And people are arguing about it, but the astronomers say, I believe I'll get this right, that on the vernal equinox, if you look east, the very first constellation, the very last constellation that rises before dawn is the age that we're actually in. It's a simple formula for working out what age we're in, and we're already in that age of Aquarius. So this understanding, we really have to take into account what's going on. We are being given this information. It's just very confused. Going back to the calendars and the Mayan elders and stuff, I believe that they retained knowledge probably from Atlantis and probably from a previous high civilization. I know that the Mayan elders have had problems because of a lot of their books were burnt, but they have tried their best to preserve information, and we are moving from one major long calendar to the start of a brand new one. And as far as they're concerned, that transition was like 25 years. It's considered to be like a birth. So when you have a gestation period, it's not exactly exact. It's just a convenient... We say that babies take 9 months before they're born. Well, some babies come earlier and some babies come later, but it's approximately 9 months.
Right.
And that's how we should view the transition from one age to the next. And as far as I'm concerned, space weather has become more of an issue in the last 25 years, which is approximately what modern Mayan elders have been telling us. And I have a problem with people who feel that they should just be ignored. Why? It's their heritage. It's their calendars that people have been trying to make money from. Okay?
Definitely. I wanted to return to the sign there as well. You're talking about Ophiuchus, right? The 13th sign. The serpent bearer.
Ophiuchus, correct.
Yeah. Serpent bearer. So what is that? Is that where the energy is coming from?
You picked that up from that Philip Pullman, haven't you?
Actually, no. I knew about this from previously, but I've heard that he... I haven't read those books myself, but I want to talk more about that with you later, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. That is the direction of where the energy is coming from. But I see it like a mix. I sort of see the changes. There's energies coming in from deep space. There's energies coming in from Ophiuchus. We've got magnetars blasting us. Now, whether it's because the whole solar system, when you think about the shift of the ages and the zodiacs, I'm not an astronomer and I'm not an astrologist, so this is not my specialist subject. But I actually think, if you think about a shift of where energies are actually coming from, and it's a big, long cycle of 26,000 years, we've hit a point where the solar system has access to a different type of energy. That's what I believe is happening, and that's why it's very, very important. I know people talk about precession and talk about the Earth wobble. I don't think that's what is happening. I think this is a whole solar system is being perturbed by energy, and it's like a sort of like a, maybe it's a slow wobble for the whole solar system, but we're now having access to energy coming from a different point in space, and the solar system is being flooded with this energy. And I think it's not what I think, actually. This is what our scientists tell us, that we have these times of massive shift of energies where Earth's magnetic field drops, cosmic energies flood the planet, and we have climate change and massive evolutionary change. Some species die off and others thrive, and some appear from nowhere, as if they just appeared. And this is where I believe this is the divine aspect to it, universal intelligence. There are decisions being made, but it's not made by humans. There is some kind of cosmic consciousness, or whatever you want to call it, but there's an intelligence that controls the whole lot. And the life that's on this planet, all the life forms can only exist on this planet if they can fit in, if they can adapt to the environment. And this is part of the spiritual evolution thing that's very important, because humans, I believe that the new human is coming, and that there will be mutations, and certain humans will be able to cope, and some humans will not be able to cope. It's as simple as that. And there will be evolutionary change over a certain period of time. And it's something that's happened before in the past, and it's happening now. The most important thing to know is that there's a flood of energy coming. Earth is literally dropping her shields. That's what the scientists say. That's not what I'm saying. They say Earth is dropping her shields. We're getting a decrease in intensity, and there's like a domino effect. one thing impacts the next, which impacts the next, which impacts the next, which impacts the next. You've got, and this is, I'm talking about complexity. So I don't want to talk about CO2, but scientists trying to point out that we have an overabundance of one element, is, you know, of one greenhouse gas, is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because it's a knock-on effect. It's, I mean, and I'm still trying to work this out. After 7-8 years, I'm still trying to work this out. But I'm paying attention to world experts. I've just picked up a geocataclysm report, 2011. We picked up about 2 months or maybe 10 weeks ago now or something. And I was just so relieved to find this report. And they actually say that the planet, our planet, is facing a global energy leap, and that we have to expect there to be more disasters. And they've said there was a direct link between what's happening in the Earth's external magnetic field, the magnetosphere, and the climate. And as I say, with the domino effect, it's easy to work out. It's easy to work out the links. But it's so obscure, because we have a group of people on this planet who wish to keep control of our world in their what they want, how they want the world run.
For sure.
And yeah. And I believe the reason for taking CO2 out of the atmosphere is purely esoteric. There is no scientific reason for taking a greenhouse gas out of the atmosphere that is actually beneficial for life on this planet.
Right, yeah.
And there's a very delicate balance of the gases and how it operates and interfaces with the ecosystems and the biosystems. But there is this desperation to remove specifically CO2. And I've worked it out. I've actually worked out why now as well.
Let us in a little bit on that. Why is it this significant? Why do they choose this?
I have a real problem, because I've been working now for 7-8 years. I don't get paid. I sell a few books. I have to fight off people. I get a lot of people asking me for free. I get a lot of what I call beggars. I'm sorry to say this. I get a lot of people who that just want something for free. And I'm constantly being bothered by people. And I think, well, why am I doing this? I'm working like a dog. I'm working really, really hard. Because sure. I think this is really important. This is a whole planet here. I felt very much on my own. And I have a dilemma now. Do I share all my research and other people take the credit, or do I just tell people the truth? And I think, well, at the moment, it's more important for people to understand the truth so that people can prepare. CO2. The thing with space weather is the influx of energy coming into our solar system is highly charged. The planet is charging up like a battery. It's becoming much more electrified. Everything is electrified. The atmosphere is electrified. There's far more currents in the ground, in the Earth's mantle. So there is a link, obviously, with earthquakes. The geomagnetic field is changing. The geomagnetic poles are moving very quickly. They're all related, of course, but the CO2 is as part of the solar activity and the warming of the seas, releasing CO2 in a highly electrified environment. There will come a point where the skies will ignite. We will see a massive plasma discharge that has existed on this planet before. This is what I've written. I wrote an essay about the greatest transition, and I talked about the arrival of the ladder to heaven. Okay?
Yeah.
This, I believe that is the only reason for removing CO2, to stop the Earth moving to the status of what I call paradise. It's purely esoteric. Now, I'm sure there's people out there that will be completely stunned that I'm saying this. I'm saying it, and I would love people to prove me wrong. I'd love people to prove me wrong, but I don't think I am wrong. I think I'm completely correct on this one. There is absolutely no reason to remove the CO2. The only reason is that if you find the research, I'm not going to tell you what the research is, but the people who know how to do research will find it, in a weak plasma that's got a slight amount of CO2 in it, if you put too much, if you pass too much electrical current, or pass a large voltage through that plasma, it will ignite and create a plasma discharge, a bright plasma discharge. But what we will see on this planet is something that is permanent. And then you can go into all the mythology, and it's all done, the work has already been done. I'm not making anything up. We will see a massive plasma discharge in the skies, and that will be the sign that we've reached the planetary status of paradise, and that's what they want to stop. There'll be no argument about this shift on this planet when that happens.
Right, right. We've talked about this in the past, obviously, with David Talbot and Wallace Thornhill about the, yes, the plasma discharge in the past. So that's interesting that it's speculated then that this will be something that is bound to happen in the future. But, I mean,
there's... this is my speculation. I've never heard this from anybody else. I'm saying that I believe the reason why CO2, they're desperate to remove the CO2 out in the atmosphere, has got nothing to do with global temperatures and increase in temperatures. There's absolutely no reason to remove the CO2. It's beneficial to life on this planet. The only reason is in a highly charged, electrified atmosphere, we could see a massive plasma discharge. The skies will literally light up, and there'll be a plasma discharge that'll be seen all over the world. And you have to go and look at my essay, and actually the research that's been done, that we have had times in the past where the planet has been highly electrified, and the memory of this has been retained in petroglyphs.
Yep.
Okay. Yep, and this indeed. All the work of Anthony Perrat's work,
yeah, that's right,
and his team of scientists. So, okay, people, I put it out there now. People can argue with me if they want to.
Yeah, that's really good. How? Tell us how. Because I mean, okay, is this time? This is, you know, they need a certain. There's a time window here.
I have no idea. I just think it's all panic. I think that the whole idea with CO2 was to make money out of this process, convince people that the CO2 was forcing the temperatures up and it was trapping heat in the atmosphere. The only problem is there's no warming. It hasn't been warming for 16 years. And in fact, in the 1970s, climatologists were talking about us moving into the next ice age.
Yeah.
The neo-boreal or something it's called, time of cooler temperatures. We've had this tremendous arguing and fighting over the climate. It's got very, very serious, very serious. But in fact, I'm very proud of the scientists that have stood up. There's been a tremendous effort to get people to believe that it's our fault that the globe is warming, when in fact solar activity is extremely low. And if it stays this low, sunspots disappear. We'll be moving into the next ice age. But I think that the CO2 excuse, I'm actually calling it the CO2 secret, is because it doesn't matter. I mean, the analogy I'd like to use is if you touch bare wires, there's some spare, it doesn't matter what temperature of the web, if you're inside or outside, if it's cold or if it's snow, if you touch bare wires, you're going to get electrocuted. Temperatures have got nothing to do with it. And I think the whole global warming thing is a massive red herring. That's what I believe.
Yeah, indeed. My initial thought is they will never be able to pull this off in time if this is something that's happening right now.
Well, the thing is, it's a sudden flood of energy. 20 years is nothing in geological time. It's a very, very short period. I mean, we've had a slow flood, and all of a sudden, a slow build-up, and all of a sudden, it's now... obviously, I've been doing this and collecting information bit by bit every day. I've been doing my duty, and I've been looking at all the different websites, looking for the NASA press releases, looking for press releases from the European Space Agency. I picked up one, was it 2009 or 2010? It talks about holes and rifts in the magnetosphere, which is Earth's magnetic... it's like a cosmic umbrella that protects us from the energy coming from deep space. Cosmic umbrella is probably a nice way for people to understand this.
Mm-hmm.
But in 2009, we had this very quiet announcement from the European Space Agency that there was holes there. Well, this year, a few weeks back, we had another announcement that it's now a sieve. It's gone from having a few holes, rifts, to being a sieve. It has a property of a sieve, that's what they said, which means is that, you know, it's a sieve. I mean, the thing is if you were paying attention to the Japanese have this very nice simulation of the magnetic environment of Earth and the magnetosphere, and it's now defunct. But you could actually see that when we had bad geomagnetic storms, you know, major blasts of space weather from the sun, either a coronal mass ejection or a solar flare, the gap between the umbrella and Earth was just filled with particles, you know, and and sometimes the umbrella itself was actually squashed very close to Earth, which meant that there was tremendous amount of radiation and particles which were affecting the various different satellites in low Earth orbits and the various different orbits that they're in. That is a major concern now. Space weather is a major concern for the whole of our satellite infrastructure. So now they're trying to turn around and saying that CO2 is making satellites go too fast. It's like CO2 is the excuse for everything. There's even a website called numberwatch.co.uk, and they've documented 883 different things caused by CO2 and global warming. It's just ridiculous. There is a desperation. I don't believe that that's true. And there are websites, many, many websites now dedicated to debunking the lies. And I don't want to use this terminology, but to me, there's no point being mealy-mouthed. There's no point trying to defend these people because they don't have the interests of humanity at heart. They don't. They simply don't. They just want to say, look, this is a business opportunity. How can we make money? Knowledge is power. What can we do to make money? That's it. Unfortunately, that's what I believe is going on.
Mm-hmm. Yep, definitely. Now, Susan, in a little while here, we're gonna take a break. We want to continue talking more with you in our second hour, of course. But let's talk a little bit about how people can support your work. You do have the book out there right now, Tuning the Diamonds. We're going to give out the websites and everything for that. But how about get some help producing a DVD or something, an online video from some of your lectures or talk, and charge some money for that so people can support your work?
I need a business manager, basically. I need someone I can trust. I've been, the last 6-7 years, I've just been horrified by the sort of the nature of the people that have tried to get involved with me. I'm sorry to say this. It might sound really harsh, but...
Well, it is what it is.
There's a lot of people trying to take advantage. And I just need... I would just like to have people around me that I can trust even.
Of course.
I know I should be doing the DVDs and stuff, but I actually had some American people contacting me wanting to get involved. And I won't even identify who these people were, but one of the things they said to me was, do you want to be rich like us? Did you hear that? I felt like I was being approached by, you know, Gollum from the Hobbits, you know,
right.
Lord of the Rings, you know, the sort of this creature. I'm not doing this because I want to be rich. And I'm very bad with money. And, you know, I'm more of a philosopher type, more of an academic, more of an intellectual type. I have got mystical leanings to me, but I don't have much in the way of business. So I feel like I need to be around people who actually care and can advise me. That's what I'm really looking for at this moment in time. I'm not a new ager. I have a real issue with what's going on in the cultic milieu generally. Mm. So, yes, I should be producing DVDs and stuff like that, but I feel like I need some kind of guidance on that front. So I don't want a flood of people contacting me. I regularly get a lot of people who are looking for something that they can get for nothing from me. I feel like I am attracting quite a few frauds at the moment, but they don't last 5 minutes with me.
Well, are you extending, if there are genuine people out there who really would like to help you in this way, are you extending,
That's what I want. To them? Yeah. It's very frightening for me because I do attract people who think they've found an idiot. And there's no point me saying it in any other way. I do get people who think they've found, I get people who watch one video and they come running. And they think they found the next cult member, or they think they found somebody that's got lots of cash that they can extort money out of. I get a lot of funny people.
All right.
So for me, I would like to be involved with people, but I'm terrified, especially the New Ages, because of the teachings, the prosperity teachings, the law of attraction type teachings. I'm not into any of it. I'm sorry. I've had to study very hard human development, spiritual evolution. I have my synesthesia as well, which helps me work out what I'm dealing with people. And I'm being really blunt. Do not contact me if you think you found some idiot. You think you can manipulate me, just don't even waste your time. It's harsh, but I've had a very difficult 7 years. It's been very difficult.
Well, of course, I understand you. On that note, but okay, so if there's people out there who want to help again then with the producing something maybe in the video format or something like that, that's what you're seeking and genuine people who would like to help you out on that note.
Yes.
Yeah.
But because of my experiences, and it sounds really harsh putting it like this, but I've been forced to study what's been going on in the cultic milieu and different personality types. I've had to study narcissists, malignant narcissists, psychopaths. And there's a lot of people who I call professional liars. And they see someone like me as an easy mark. So I'm not easy. And I'm actually quite difficult at the moment because of my experiences. I'm quite difficult to put up with now because I don't take much. I don't tolerate much. And one of my things that's already on my blog, and I don't care if this person is listening to this interview or not, somebody I knew that's been trying to get me involved with them, and it was over a period of about 4 years, and I was keeping them away. And because certain things were concerning me about their attitudes and their behaviours. But what really did it for me is when I had a phone call and this person casually mentioned to me that they had sold a workbook online and they were in a bit of trouble because they hadn't actually had time to write it. And I presumed that they were actually expecting me to offer to actually write this workbook that had already been sold in their name. And for me, that was just the pits. That was just the complete pits. I just thought, this person really think I'm an idiot to actually get involved with you, because if I agreed to do this, what would be coming next?
Yeah, I know it's very unfortunate. But Susan, tell us how people can support your work as it is right now. Give us the title of your book.
Well, they can give me a donation if they want to.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, I have various different workbooks I've produced. There is a tremendous amount of information, and I've been working for 7 years, and there's a lot of information there that's free. If people want to support my work, they can just say thank you by sending a donation. I think that would be nice, quite frankly.
Very good. And the book as well.
This is very serious, what's happening on this planet. And people need to understand. I assume that in the second segment, we're going to talk more about space weather. But NASA has been warning its employees about cataclysm, about disasters.
Mm-hmm.
And people need to understand why. Why is NASA warning? Why are geoscientists having major conferences now and warning that people need to be prepared for higher disasters? What happened with Hurricane Sandy? In fact, it wasn't a hurricane. When it hit land, it was just called a storm. But it should really have been, people should have been said it's like a Hurricane 3 or a Hurricane 4. People need to understand why scientists are talking about lots of energy in the atmosphere to power these massive storms.
Yeah, yep.
And why they're thinking there's going to be more earthquakes. Now in Japan, they're talking about another earthquake, a magnitude 10, 32 times stronger than the one that caused devastation in March 2011.
Hmm.
They're talking about, you know, that's only one level less than an asteroid hitting the sort of the type of asteroid that killed off the dinosaurs. I mean, they're talking about massive, mega disasters now. And I've been quietly picking up these reports, telling people that this is a new kind of future. I believe my work is extremely important. You know, I'd like to save a few lives, actually. So people, because at the moment, people are not getting it.
Well, the masses are not, definitely not.
And of course, I'm not, because of my stance and where I'm coming from, I'm not selling, you know, survival gear. That's not where I'm at.
Yep.
But for me, I'm more interested in educating people about the consequences of space weather and the need for change, that we need to start looking at how we can do things differently on this planet. That's where I'm at. It's more of an intellectual approach. Okay, this massive change, what does humanity have to do to move forward, to do things differently so we can survive and thrive and evolve? And I would like to sort of meet with people who are serious, who actually care about humanity. And before I forget, I know we're going over the time, well over the hour and everything, but...
It's okay.
But this is for the people who just don't have a subscription.
Sure, yeah.
We've just had, I think it's 7 seismologists that have been convicted because they did provide an earthquake warning in Italy, Aquila, and they didn't provide an adequate warning and 300 people died. And they've been convicted for that now.
I don't know if it's a manslaughter charge.
Have you heard about this?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
And the seismologists are saying there's no way that we can predict these earthquakes. There's no way we can predict these earthquakes. But a young technician was using radon to actually pick up the escape of this radon gas out of the ground. And he was so concerned that he actually hired a car with a loudspeaker and drove around the streets trying to warn people that there was an earthquake coming.
Wow.
And he was reported to the authorities and they charged him for scaremongering. Okay?
Just, wow.
They told him to take his stuff off the internet. He had information on the internet. They told him to take his information off to actually, and I think he had something on YouTube as well. When the earthquake came, 300 people died. And it's, to me, somehow we've got to change your attitude. This is why I'm doing this. We've got to get real. Understand what's happening. Don't be just, you know, and we have Hurricane Sandy, and it's not a hurricane. When it hit the coast of the eastern seaboard of the United States, it was only defined as a storm because it wasn't being powered by warm waters. It was linked up to the jet stream. And I'm thinking, what do you mean it's linked up to the jet stream? Was the jet stream linked up to the cosmos? Because this, what the NASA's been calling these magnetic flux tubes. It's like a giant tornadoes coming in from space. And the people need to understand, this is serious. There's a serious shift of huge amounts of energy hitting this planet. That's why they're saying that we're going to see more mega disasters. And I want to teach this because it's important. It's important. There's a lot of people, when the meteorologists refused to call Sandy a hurricane, they just thought, oh, it's nothing. It's not a hurricane.
Yeah. It's funny that way. Sorry, Susan, to interject here, but it's funny that way that minor things in the media are usually overplayed enormously. They're making a big thing out of nothing. But in this case, when there is a big thing, they're actually downplaying it. And most people anyway want to put their heads in the sand. I mean, the economy is bad. They don't want any more bad news. You know, give me just movies about nothing and easy entertainment. That's all they want, you know?
Well, I just want to just say one final thing about... this is for the people who don't have a subscription. This is part two.
Sure, go ahead, Susan.
There was a video that someone took, and I don't know where it was, but it was obviously linked to do with this Sandy event. And they're inside their house, and they're filming with their phone camera, and you see the trees slightly swaying. Nothing big. Then the next minute, the trees just go snap, 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 snap. And then there's a fire, there's a burst of fire. And I thought to myself, wait a minute, I wonder if the jet stream actually touched ground. Because it was like nothing. Normally when you see a hurricane, force winds, you see the tree bend over and the leaves all horizontal, everything's horizontal. It was none of that. It was the weirdest thing I've ever seen. I've got the link on my blog. I thought to myself, you know what? I wonder if the jet stream actually touched ground and just the reaction of the trees was bizarre. They were just slightly swaying in the wind and then the next minute, snap, literally snapping in half. Literally. And for me, people need to understand there's more going on than we're being told. Because I looked at that and I thought, wait a minute, that is very strange.
So let me ask you a question about that. That means that it's very, very localized. It's like an incredible wind, in a pretty narrow band. Is that correct? So the things in the back and the front of it is not really affected, but where this, whatever it actually was, but if it's the jet stream touching down, is that only in its path?
I'm just speculating, is it really... now. I'm trying to understand this weird video that someone took. This person actually managed to get onto Katie, which is it Katie Couric or something, with this video of what happened at Sandy. But it's the weirdest video I've ever seen. I thought, what is really going on here? We're not getting the complete truth of this. It wasn't even hardly raining. It was just the winds was... the trees were slightly swaying in the breeze, and that was it. And I feel that people need to understand the fact the planet is now open to the elements. The planet is now open to the cosmic elements, and we are going to have very strange and weird things happening. The Earth's magnetic field is like a sieve.
The shield is down, basically.
Shield is down, yeah. And that has implications. When I first started doing my book, and I was interested in the impact of the geomagnetic field on humans, but there was no appreciation there. So I talked more general about space weather and how we can see the changes in the atmosphere and stuff. But at the end of the day, humans are going to be affected on a very personal level.
All right, very good. We're going to continue with more, of course, in the second hour. And again, I just want to mention the website here so people know where to go if they and when they want to support your work. So it's joyfirepublishing.com.
It's really the donation is on susanrenison.com. That's my main website with the blog.
Indeed.
I've reorganized the blog these days. It's much easier to find things, I believe. So it's www.susanrenison.com. And that's where there's a tremendous amount of information. And if you look on the left-hand side, there is a donation, a heart with a donation button, if you feel that. But I'm not really asking new people to go to my website and give me money. I get a lot of hits on my website. I'm up to about 1.4 million hits per month at the moment. And that is not reflected in any kind of love and support, I don't think, at the moment. Not really. I don't think I get much love and support, but anyway, that's it.
Okay. Very good. No, but it's good. So go there and support Susan's work if you think it's important, and of course, if you think it's worthwhile for the reasons that Susan just mentioned. Of course, again, the website susanrenison.com. We're going to have this linked up on redicecreations.com, and we're going to continue talking more about this, Susan. So stay with us. We'll be right back with more. Thank you. the second hour, we discuss the Mayan calendar and specific scientific evidence proving an energy shift has been taking place. Then Susan details the effects of space weather on the planet and also talks about the morphogenetic field, dark matter, and fluctuating magnetic fields. We'll also discuss somatic hypermutation, the ability to adapt to rapid changes, and relate this to ideas of evolution and de-evolution. And later we'll cover superstorms and weather manipulation. You can find over a year of radio for free without commercial interruptions on our website redicecreations.com. And when you want to hear more, including most of our second hours and all the programs from 2006 to 2012, please check out redicemembers.com for a membership. When we return with more radio in just a few days, you can hear our program with Patrick Flanagan and then a shorter interview with Rupert Sheldrake following this. All right, we'll see you on the other side with Susan Joy Renison. Thank you for staying with us.